Was it really just 300 Spartans versus the entire Persian army? Did Alexander the Great really believe he was a god? Was the Tower of Babylon a real place? If you've ever been watching a movie, a TV show, reading a book, maybe even playing a video game that set itself in our own history, you may have asked some of these questions. The Grimdark History Podcast looks to explore that intersection between history and popular fiction, and we want to get to the nitty-gritty details and answer those questions while exploring all the fun, fascinating, and interesting things in our own history. Come check out the Grimdark History Podcast.
Batman's been using Viagra because that guy's packing some heat.
No, he's still going to make us dinner, but he is dying.
Robin, you shit the bed every single day.
I'll bet $1 million now.
At least you get paid. I'm doing this now for free.
They all have their genitalia exposed.
Hello and welcome to Movie
Smash!
Hello and welcome to Movie Smash, a show where we dive headfirst into comic book movies outside the MCU. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash for a movie whose source materials from a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of Off Panel Creations. With me today, I have Jeremy Parmentier.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Parmentier, also of the Retrovaniacs podcast and the second largest fan of ice-based puns.
And Fergal Amayo.
Well, this is Fergal Amayo, your Gotham Knight expert of all things Gotham, owner of Gotham Knight Comics, where we get our nerd on, where we enjoy it, and I am here to chill out. Sorry, I just felt that was really appropriate for this scene.
That is terrible. And with us today, we actually have two special guests, Joelle and Anne Dreen from the Rewind Rewatch podcast.
Hi, I'm Anne Dreen. I am one half of the Rewind Rewatch podcast. On our podcast, my brother and I rewatch 90s films and discuss how well they have aged. Happy to be here.
Yeah, and I'm Joelle. I'm also happy to be here. We've been running the podcast for a little over a year now, and this is kind of right up our alley, watching old movies and just determining how well they've aged over time. Glad to be here.
And you guys definitely picked a doozy, and we'll get into that in a second.
Right, yeah.
Ooh, this is awesome.
Our movie today is, if you did not read the title before listening to the episode, our movie today is 1997's Batman and Robin, starring Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, George Clooney, and Chris O'Donnell and Uma Thurman.
And you are?
Batgirl.
That's not awfully PC. What about Batperson?
Found the Batcave.
She knows who we are.
Guess we'll just have to kill her.
Yep.
In a Joel Schumacher film. Strength. And courage.
Partners.
Honor.
Partners.
And loyalty.
Partners.
It all comes together.
We're going to need a bigger cave.
Batman and Robin.
So I really have to ask the two of you, why did you pick this movie? Did you hate us that much?
Yes.
Well, you know what's funny? Doing the podcast, a lot of people have told us they enjoy the episodes of the movies we don't like more than the episodes of the movies that we do. And we found that the movies that are not as enjoyable usually have more to talk about. So I'm expecting a very robust conversation today.
I expect the same. So all you guys, are you, before seeing the Batman and Robin movie, I assume you were familiar with the character Batman and Robin.
Actually, no. I had no idea who he was. No, absolutely not. Don't even know who he is. Who is he, actually? I'd like to know his motivations.
You know, it's funny that you say, who is he? Because I think one of the funniest things about these movies is that he is actually the most famous person in Gotham, and nobody's figured out that it's the same guy. All he's doing is putting a little black piece of cloth over his eyes. Nobody knows it's that guy.
This is the same universe where Clark Kent's glasses give away that he's
right.
Not
Superman. Right, of course.
So keep that's in true. Mind, I think we live in a universe of people who just kind of only see about that far.
Yeah, but Clark Kent also changes the part to the other side of his head. That's
exactly. I think that's what Bruce Wayne adapted when he became the only guy who could somehow afford to make Batman's cool toys happen.
So I'm kind of embarrassed here. So I grew up watching Batman at a very young age. We used to watch like the 1960s Batman TV series, the reruns, like the Pow and the Bam and all that. And for some reason, when I was in kindergarten, I remember thinking that Burt Ward as Robin was so cute. I don't know why that was.
Same.
Maybe it was the tights. I'm not quite sure. But when I think about Batman, I think about like the old movies and like Kitka and all of that. I never actually read the comic books, but to me, Batman is one of the greatest superheroes of all time. And that's because he has no powers. Like, this is a man who just has like, he's basically like a badass Inspector Gadget, right?
Ooh.
He has wealth. That's kind of a superpower.
He has wealth. He's rich. And I believe that could say, I love where you're going with that, Andrine. I think I'm gonna take it up. He's actually the only, so being the resident comic historian, he's the only guy to make Darkseid fall. You know, so I mean, he's the only human being to do that. I mean, so, and pretty much, if you don't know, every member of the Justice League is actually afraid of him. Every member, without hesitation, including Superman, although he won't say it, he's absolutely afraid of him. So this is a guy who is the pinnacle of everything a person can be. And so it's an interesting dynamic when you look at the Robins, and there are many of them.
Yeah, I've always been a fan of Batman. My history with him was I knew him from the 66 show. I saw those on reruns. I'm not that old to see them on reruns, not the original run of them. But then also the animated series was big at the time. Loved that show. And that's the Batman. That was my Batman, the animated series. A sort of combination of dark and a little camp, but not the level camp of the 66. But was this, I'm hoping this was not, but maybe it was. Was this the first time you saw this movie?
I've seen it before. But I will say it was like kind of like a one-time watch. Like I watched it and I was like, oh, that was horrible. And then I kind of just put it away.
You know what's funny about that is I feel like, yes, like this movie is like known for how bad it is. I feel like when I first saw it, I was probably, 97, I was 11. So like at the time, I don't think I realized how bad it is. Watching it as an adult, you recognize like how terrible its age, especially when you compare it to all the other Batman movies. But I also feel like this is very clearly a movie for 11-year-olds. Like it seemed fine to me at the time, and until I got older, I was like, this movie stinks.
Nobody is mentioning that the Flash, the newest version of the Flash, when the Bruce Wayne gets out of the car, that's George Clooney. Just to throw that FYI, one of the other multiverses is George Clooney in that, so. It is completely campy.
Yeah, we haven't brought that up yet because we haven't gotten that part of the script.
Well, I want to throw it there because we're talking about how horrible the movie is. We're like, okay, it is pretty horrible, but it did give us George Clooney. And I believe, did he have the bat nipples? I'm trying to figure out.
Yes.
He had the bat nipples, so that's even better. George Clooney with the bat nipples.
Yeah, I saw this when it was new. And actually, for this podcast, up until this morning, I thought we were talking about the Jim Carrey the Batman Forever, because for whatever reason I just can't remember the names of these things, and I was like, oh no, it's not that one, it's the one with Mr. Freeze. I think I've seen this once. I'll be honest, I didn't remember a lot about this movie. I remember Mr. Freeze and Bane and nothing else, and as I watched the rest of it, I was like, I know why I blacked this out. This is not it was not a good movie the first time I saw it, and it's way worse now after watching every other Batman and Robin. I mean, it's kind of the stereotype. Superhero movies are terrible. This is the movie that was people kind of like, let's take a step back from superheroes for a bit. We're not going to do any more of this. We'll come back with a better idea. Because this is, we'll get into it. It's pretty miserable all around.
I thought the Fantastic Four did that, the remake of the Fantastic Four.
Now, so I saw this movie in theaters in college, and I was not the demographic for this movie. Though as a Batman fan, it was not, as you say, Joel, it was really for kids. This was not targeted towards me. And I remember leaving that theater with pretty much the thought along the lines of, well, I guess the Batman franchise is done. Like, no, there's no coming back from this thing.
Oh, it was. It was for a while until Christopher Nolan saved it.
Why don't we just sort of jump into sort of a little bit of history? Fergal, we've done the Batman's history. We've talked about who he is quite a couple different times. But can you do a little bit of history on Robin, the character itself?
Yeah, so Robin was introduced out of Detective Comics 1938, still a Bob Kane, Bill Finger, and Jerry Robinson story. And really, what's amazing about this Robin story was that the original Robin story was Dick Grayson, Flying Grayson's Tony Zucco was a mobster that killed the family. And Bruce Wayne raised him as a ward, you know, and what you saw in 66 and the storylines there was the hippie take on it, you know, Dick Ward, if you will, Richard Ward, or Richard Grayson, if you will, but then it just sort of progresses forward. And there are actually four really significant Robins, obviously ending in his son, Damian Wayne, but then you've got Carrie Fisher, who is in Elseworlds, Dark Knight Returns, Robin. You've got Tim Drake. You've got the most famous storyline, Jason Todd. And then, of course, you've got Dick Grayson. Jason Todd is the one that died at the hands of the Joker and came back as Red Hood. And then, obviously, Dick Grayson, who went on to become Nightwing and went on to do his own thing and actually wear the mantle of the Bat in a couple stories. So he's had an interesting run. And this Batgirl doesn't actually exist in the comics because it's Barbara Gordon and Helen Bertinelli and several other versions, but not this Batgirl. This was Alicia Silverstone coming off of Clueless.
You mentioned Bob Kane. Did you guys know this was the last Batman movie Bob Kane watched? The creator of Batman.
Oh, no.
That just depressed the whole story. Like, that's a bad way to die. Like, no!
Bad way to die.
He passed away shortly after watching this movie.
What did you do?
Shortly, 5 minutes after watching this movie.
I'm not going to say that it was the cause of his death, but...
It was a contributing factor, as they say on SVU. It was a contributing factor, cause yet undetermined.
All right, so quick spoiler warning. If this is the first time you're joining us, just a heads up. And we're going to discuss certain elements of this film and story that might be considered spoilers. But to be honest with you, I feel no shame in spoiling this movie for people. In fact, I think do not go see it so I can save you that harm. We're doing you guys a public service right now, but consider yourself warned.
They're all beating this movie up. There were so many one lines in this movie. You can pick them up. I'm going to be the contrarian voice of the group and say, this movie was full of one-liners by everybody. That's the one thing they got right. Thank you, Joel.
It's too much. It's too many one-liners. It's nothing but one-liners. There's nothing else but one-liners.
It makes the whole process succinct.
Before we sort of jump into characters and the certain scenes, Andreen, why don't you give us the plot of this movie?
All right, I need to put on like my TV voice, all right?
Okay.
Oh, this is going to be great. Rock it.
In a time, in a world.
Close. In a world, in a world where Gotham is attacked by new villains, Mr. Freeze and Poison Ivy, it is up to Batman, Robin, and new superhero Batgirl to foil their plan to freeze the Earth and repopulate it with Ivy's venom-fueled flora.
Wow. Did you practice that? Because that is the best intro of a movie we've had. Like, I was thinking maybe some story. Jeremy, you're replaced, my friend. We just need to record subplots on all of this. I think she should be doing your album intros, to be honest with you.
Fine. You're totally fine.
So, yeah, Jeremy, the bar's been set.
I feel like it's got to start in a world. I mean, if you don't, it just takes the whole thing away.
This movie, like many superhero movies, have a cadre of villains and heroes. Where do you guys like to start? Who do you want to talk about the most?
Oh, let's talk about the guy who doesn't get the credit, Dr. Woodrow. Let's talk about the guy who does not get fully recognized at all throughout this movie and whose portrayal was so amazing. Somehow or another, he was the one that created Bane. And I just felt like that was amazing. He created the Super Soldier program. So technically, he was a crazy, whacked out version of Dr. Erskine. And so I just feel like he was underappreciated.
Wasn't he supposed to be like the same doctor who becomes Dr. Florence, something like that in the comics?
I don't remember him in the comics, quite frankly, and I've read a lot of Batman comics, but I don't remember him actually in it. I just wanted to mention him because I thought his portrayal was awesome.
He's the same guy who played Lex Luthor's father in Smallville.
Wow. Did. He also played in Black Adam's dad in, or not Black Adam dads, in Shazam and Dr. Sabine's dad.
He's been a lot of superhero movies as a supporting character.
Yes.
So what do you want to talk about with this guy? I mean, he was in one scene for half a second.
Oh, because he was cool. Like, I mean, kind of, like, he was cool. Like, I just think the whole thing was cool. He made Ivy. He was cool. I just think he was, and he brought the super soldier out. He inadvertently helped to make Ivy, so he's cool.
I mean, was I the only one who felt like the this ununited nations seemed like people that we were supposed to recognize? Maybe like knocked off versions of like Hitler and Saddam Hussein. I was like, oh, this is very on the nose. I mean, yeah. Just like everything else in this film, but. I was like, oh wow, this is what we're doing. I guess it is the 90s. This is still acceptable.
We recently covered 66's Batman, and that reminds me of the villain.
That's right. Yep.
What was that group called again? I forgot.
Council around the table that all gets turned into like powders of dust.
Oh yeah. Such a good scene.
I think the other thing is like when Ivy, I mean, we're talking about this now anyway. So when Ivy turns into the villain, how somehow she like picks up an accent I'm not really sure where the accent came from. Was trying to put my finger on exactly what it was. It was almost like Southern Belle, but kind of British. I wasn't sure what direction she was even coming from. But then when she would like show up to, for example, when she goes to accost Bruce Wayne about how he's killing the planet, the accent's gone. She's back to the old doctor. But then when she puts on the suit, then the accent just comes back again.
I have so much to say about Poison Ivy. It's unbelievable.
Well, let's jump into it. Before we jump into it real fast, Uma Thurman is like the only actor in this movie who actually liked being in this movie.
No, actually, Arnold Schwarzenegger did like being in the movie. He enjoyed the suit. He enjoyed the He just didn't like to wear the suit unless his face was being seen. So it's stunt double wore. But I'm prepared for you, Chris. I don't have a steel book, but I have the internet.
This is a very random reference, but I recently found out that the guy who's in the recent season of the White Lotus is Arnold Schwarzenegger's son. And I had no idea about this. I was reading some interview that he did and talking about how he got into Hollywood. And he was talking about like, just, oh, being around it was so cool. And I used to see my dad and he would come in as my dad one day and then he'd walk out and he'd be Mr. Freeze. And I thought, this is amazing. I'm like, oh, he's got a positive memory from that. And then, you know, now he's on White Lotus. So there you go. It worked out.
Hey, worked out for him.
Yeah.
Okay. So first off, when it comes to Poison Ivy, we already know this trope, and Joelle and I have seen this on our podcast in 90s teen movies, where you have this woman who no one finds attractive, her hair is in shambles, you know, she wears no makeup. Of course, she has to wear glasses.
Has to wear glasses.
Because, you know, the glasses makes you so unattractive. And then after she transforms, now her hair has been dyed. She's wearing contacts.
She's wearing a cat suit.
Yeah, she's scantily clad, and now her boss is obsessed with her and like wants to, you know, make out with her, sleep with her, whatever. And so that was the first thing that came up to me, was like, okay, we get this whole transformation. This always happens in these films. But when her boss basically tries to kill her, pushes her down, all the poisons hit her skin, I instantly thought about Selena and how Max Schreck tried to kill her in Batman Returns.
That's actually a good reference. I think that was almost a remake of that exact same scene in a lot of ways.
Actually, beyond that, every Batman movie in this series, one of the villains was created by their boss. Every one of them.
Oh, wow.
The Joker was by his mob boss.
That's right.
Right? Catwoman, Max.
Max Schreck.
Actually, the Joker was dropped in the vat by Batman. So he was
not in
Batman.
He was sent
to Ace Chemicals. So it's a very clear distinction on that, because, you know, again, that one above all else, he was sent there by his boss, but he was killed and created by the very hero that he's been spent his entire life trying to take down.
And then you had Harvey Dent, right?
My boss.
And I was going to say, the next thing that reminded me of Catwoman, specifically in Batman Returns, is after Poison Ivy transforms, and now she's a badass, and she just starts trashing the lab. Like, she's throwing things everywhere. She's like, you know, I'm here. And I couldn't help but think about that scene when Catwoman goes back to her apartment and starts trashing it for God knows what reason. And I was just like, what is it about when a woman gets power, we just feel the need to be destructive?
To their own property, apparently.
Yeah.
who are they proving this to? Speaking of who are they doing this for, Arnold as Mr. Freeze, and I guess Poison Ivy as well, spend half of this movie just narrating when no one else in the room. He does a lot of this in the movie where he's like talking about what he's thinking and what he's going to do, and there's like nobody else there. He lives in this ice freezer, I guess.
Ice cream shop.
Oh, he's got his group of thugs in their winter coats and they're all freezing. They got icicles on their mustache. And then Vivica Fox just shows up in a bikini. What's going on here? How is she surviving?
I don't know. I thought it was kind of a knockoff of the Iceberg Lounge for a minute. I was like, where's Vivica?
Because now that I saw
I only saw it today, and I was like, why is she hitting on Vic? Didn't even have a thing for Norfield? What's going on? Like, just walking around and like...
She was trying to help him move on.
That's the other thing. His whole villain arc is because he's trying to save his wife. He's not even paying attention to other women. So then it begs the question, what is she even doing there? He obviously didn't invite her.
She figured out where it was at, had a thing for the cold.
She just showed up.
She showed up. And I honestly think it just tested well with the male segment of the audience.
Of course.
I did like Mr. Freeze's costume, just as a thing, not sort of making it comic book accurate, but it was a very interesting design that they had for that.
I love the blue glitter skin. I was a huge fan of the blue skin.
The teeth white, the teeth cleaner, whenever he opened his mouth, that was the best part. The one that opened his mouth. Right. It'd be an endless winter.
You know that light coming out of his mouth occasionally? That was because he put LEDs in his mouth, batteries, and he actually chewed them. The battery acid broke and started spilling into his mouth. So there were several times his tongue was burned by battery acid from those LEDs.
Oh, that's insane.
That made that $25 million check a little bit funner, because that's exactly what he got paid to do that movie, y'all. Just thought I'd tell you that.
$25 million. He's one of two villains who got better billing than Batman himself.
Yeah, on the credits at the end, he's the first person listed. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Jack Nicholson and Arnold Schwarzenegger, the only two that ever got higher billing than the other Batman right now, which is great because I think he wants to come back as Mr. Freeze. I'm gonna give it up.
No.
Why? Why would you want that?
Because it's alternate versions, right? I mean, you brought back George Clooney as Batman. Come on, man.
But not for a whole movie, for like 1 second.
And that universe is dead.
I mean, it's got to be better, right? It can't possibly get worse.
No, it couldn't.
Yeah, why do you want to be reminded of this? Like, that's like, showing your friends drunk
photos of
yourself.
Because I want to hear one more one-liner, and I just want it to be, I'm here to make it froze. You know, I just want something one-line-ish coming from him. It could be a second, but the impact could last in the meme universe.
I want to hear your guys' opinion on Bane.
I think Bane is terrible. I think Bane is the worst. In the cartoon, Bane was cool, and I liked Bane. I like Bane in the comic books. I thought the current version of Bane is totally different, but I like that current, but the most recent iteration of Bane in the movies was good. This Bane sucks. This Bane is like a bad version of the Incredible Hulk. He's not interesting at all. He just repeats whatever the last thing someone says was, and it's...
He's got such a loosely connected hose. I mean, you're investing in so much technology. All they had to do was touch it and it came loose. At some point, that feels like the weak point in the whole armor.
It's the original iPhone cord.
They got Arnold Schwarzenegger, a guy who's not supposed to be a big ripped guy. Mr. Freeze is not a big ripped guy. And this movie is a big ripped guy. They get Bane, someone who could be someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger, some big bodybuilder to make himself look right. But instead, it's like inflatable arms with veins drawn on them. It's really bad looking. He's green because of the plant juice or whatever that's making him that strong.
They just pumped Venom into Jesse Pinkman and then...
Yes!
And became Bane.
He looks like he's the guy from Mad Max, the Mad Max Fury Road. The guy that's like the juice or whatever, the guy that's screaming the whole time. He's like, yeah, we're going to do this. It's that guy. But then they pump him up with stuff and he just screams whatever the last word is that you had at him. And he seems like he can't really do a whole lot other than rip, punch through walls, whatever. But then they're like, oh, but you can also be my chauffeur. Like, I don't understand any of the points how to drive.
And he wore a hat and he followed all speed limit laws. That threw me off. Like, there were things that I was picking up and I was like, wait a minute. Did Pamela teach him this? Because I'm just like, it was such a short distance. And he's rolling the car through the streets and there was a lot of calmness. So there were some moments. But again, I think, it was completely plausible that Victor Freeze would live in the only place in town that had a lot of cold on it.
They didn't, but they didn't need Bane. They didn't need this many villains, right? You could have just done Mr. Freeze and Poison Ivy to kind of have the back and forth. You don't need three supervillains that are at least named, right? You have gang members. There's a neon gang that does whatever. I have no idea what they're doing. Like, there's all these things in the movie. You don't need Bane. You don't need Bane at all. And yet they have Bane and it's wasted. It's completely... It was done. It feels like it was done because they're like, you know what? We could sell a toy of Bane. Let's put Bane in this movie. That's the only reason I can think why they would have
added. I could say that for about 2 hours worth of this film.
Yeah, that's true.
I love the gang convention. There was apparently an entire gang that just dressed up like the guy from A Clockwork Orange, which was bizarre.
If you've ever seen the movie The Warriors,
yes.
It looked like it was just The Warriors, but then in Batman. Loved it. That part I liked, but
that was a good scene. Yes.
Also, very confused by the beginning. First of all, the movie starts right away. It's just like Mr. Freeze. They're going out the door to find this guy, and then as Batman's driving there, Alfred gives him a video call and says, "Hey, there's someone holding up the Museum of Art. It's been frozen." So I'm like, "Well, why? Where was he going? He didn't find out what the mission was until he left." But
that was
anyway,
Commissioner Gordon, not Alfred.
Oh, that was Commissioner Gordon. That's right. But then they get there, and then all the bad guys are like a hockey team.
Because they have to be able to skate because it's Mr. Freeze's team. Like, that was dumb, but I at least was like, I buy that a little bit. But there were some other gangs that were just like, these are the most ineffective gangs.
Right, when they smacked their feet together and out came skate plates.
Yeah, it was fine. That totally made sense.
Perfect. That was like, they planned for that mission. It was like, they literally, I thought that was honestly, and they did that in unison. I'm not sure if you caught that. They were on the ground. They're like, yes, we're going to do that.
Love the best.
That's like, even before this mission even occurs, they have these close-ups of Batman and Robin getting dressed.
Yes.
I was like, what is happening? Like, the chest, the butts, the belt, the legs.
Yeah, it's like, right there.
Why are we doing this?
And they do it again for Batgirl.
Yes.
That's what I was going to say. The movie doesn't start with a mission. The movie starts with Batman's butt.
That's true. That's true.
And the very large neon signs as they got out their vehicles. Like, for some reason, it was straight on the nose, their parking lot.
Yeah, it's setting the tone of this movie, and basically the tone is, it's ass. That's what it's saying. Right up front, boom, movie's going to be ass. That's what it is all about. Now, you mentioned the guys in the skates, and yeah, Batman's always prepared. What's funny is I was on a show, actually literally recording this morning, about we watched The Ice Princess, a figure skating movie, and then I got to watch this. The skating is about the same.
Wow. I wonder, was that a real hockey team that they were going up against? Or was that just a bunch of people who were like, this is my chance? And I'm going to do it.
My breakthrough ice skating performance.
And then how did the Museum 4 automatically become an ice rink? It was perfectly formed as an ice rink.
That's true. It was.
One thing, so I was watching, but he was saying that Joel Schumacher used to basically, before filming of any of these scenes, would get up on stage with a megaphone and scream, "Remember, this is a cartoon." And that was their direction on how to act, which explains so much.
Yeah. No, it is definitely a movie that feels like it was made to be a music video over and over again for 2 hours. It's just fast. There's no story brought up. I mean, not that you don't want in the fourth Batman movie in the series to have Batman's origin explained, right? And I'm glad they don't, but they don't waste any time with anything. You just start the movie, you go, it's just nonstop, you know, between you have Mr. Freeze's scene, then you've got the bicycle scene, you've got everything. It's just so fast, and all of it kind of ties together, but not really. I mean, it feels like it's made to be watched in 5 minute clips.
I honestly do not understand how Barbara, and I'm sorry, do we know Alfred's last name? I should know.
Well, his last name is Pennyworth.
Pennyworth.
That's not hers. That's not hers, though.
What is her last name again?
Silverstone.
That's it. Perfect.
That's Barbara Silverstone. In this movie, that's exactly how she portrayed it. So thank you, Joelle. That was absolutely spotless. You guys are like the Wonder Twins, Xander and the other one. I just think you guys are amazing. From the whole Justice League, you guys bring that. Are you guys fraternal twins? Are you guys twins at all?
We're not, no.
Oh, my God.
That is an odd tangent, Fergal. We're talking about
that. Is an odd tangent. No, but I just think like they really have a nice vibe going on, so I'm just figuring out. It's very cool.
It's almost like they do a podcast together.
It is almost like they do that. You guys would get in the drift really well. That would work.
We're like relatives.
Kaijus, you guys would be in the drift really well. I think you guys are.
It feels like you've had several Thanksgiving dinners together.
Yeah.
A couple.
Yeah, exactly. Here and there.
The thing about Barbara for me was she's coming from England, right?
Allegedly.
Where's her accent?
Allegedly. The school was at least from England, yeah. So even if she was from the U.S., which doesn't have any accent whatsoever, but to go to school, you still pick up a little bit, right? Goes overseas, they come back with that, like stop doing that. But they can't help it. They've just heard it so long, they do it. And there's no way she wouldn't have any kind of accent.
No, and she just immediately takes the motorcycle out every night.
Yes.
I had to look it up. It's Barbara Wilson.
Barbara Wilson. Okay, so that makes absolutely no sense. And then she's the niece of Pennyworth, right? Because isn't Pennyworth like 137 years old? So does he have a relative that's out there making babies with IVF? I mean, I'm just...
Well, apparently her dead mother was his sister.
Yeah.
So that's supposed to be the tie. I thought it was a little odd, though, for... I mean, I know Batgirl as Commissioner Gordon's daughter, Barbara Gordon. So I thought it was odd for them to still name her Barbara and then just make her a completely different character. Just give her a different name if that's the case. You're already going off of canon at that point. That was a little odd.
And I don't know why that change was made. Like, there's no story reason to really not have it still be...
Just so that she could show up at the house and Robin can gawk at her.
I guess that's true. So there was a reason for her to be there.
That was the only real takeaway.
And so she could figure out the super secret password that she figures out.
Which is, honest to God, the most... Wasn't there... I mean, this is Batman. So that's the part that made a migraine take place. Like, I stopped at that moment, walked away, and then I had an Aunt Annie's pretzel and came back and watched the rest of the movie. Because I had a moment there as a true Batman fan. Again, I've read so many stories of this, where I just literally was like, are you really going to just leave out the disc? Or, no, he gave the disc. That's great. That meant stuff. But then that's the password. And then he gets the computer and like, okay, I've got a simulation. She's like, no, I don't need the simulation. Suit me up, Alfred. Just put some shit on me. I'm going to go out and fight deadly-ass crime and just know what to do. Because I went to boarding school in England.
Well, she said that she like took like, what was it, like judo or something?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what judo class where they do one-armed Dodra. I'm still trying to figure out what judo class. I mean, okay, Andrew, as our observant person from another side here, can I ask you, like, if you took a year's worth of judo and you just somehow stumbled upon the Batcave and your, you know, AI is like, so we've got a training. You're like, nah, fuck that. Suit me up. Would you just be like, let me go out there and I'll just take control? I mean, like, the first moment you're out there, you're like, I'm ready. This shit is bulletproof. I got
this. There's no way. You're but also, she drag races. You got to remember that. She also drag races.
Yeah,
so
she's cool.
She's a bit of a badass.
I'd say two things real fast. So I'd say, first off, it's unusual to me that Alfred's been building up all this information, puts it in a drive, and holds it down with a three-letter password.
Yeah.
Amazing.
He's holding dirt behind three letters.
You need to have eight characters and at least a number and some special characters. You know that's the rule. You can't just have three letters. I've tried. You cannot get away with it.
It's 1997. They didn't even have the little CAPTCHA pictures yet. So
his password's just word admin. You're good.
And Batman is so cool. He's like, oh, I guess we'll just have to get the cave bigger. I mean, I just like everybody's just super cool afterwards. Yeah. Like, yeah, we're just gonna be good now. Like, this is, we're all good. Hey, I gotta make the bat. Let me just get you another special suit on top of this really cool motorcycle that rides on ice.
No, I love when she shows up, though, and it's clearly, she's like, no, it's me, Barbara. Hi, Bruce. And right. I'm just like, what? The villains are still here, man. They still hear everything you're saying. What are you doing? That's one rule we got to follow.
Right. That is another one. Just,
what's up, Bruce?
That's great.
She wasn't given the owner's manual. She was given the suit and the motorcycle, no owner's manual. She has no rules.
Well, the other thing is, the whole purpose of him giving her this CD disc was for her to somehow get it to his brother. And it seems like she just was like, oh, well, there's a cave here. I guess I'm just going to do this. I guess the brother just never gets it.
I think the Alfred was prepared for her to be like, I'm ready to be Barbara. And so the AI, in its smart AI capacity, was like, well, okay, we're going to train first. Can you at least just commit to a week or at least an hour or two of understanding what I'm about to give you? And she's like, fuck no, let me just put this shit on. I look good.
That's one character we didn't talk about, the Max Headroom Alfred.
Max Headroom Alfred was terrible. Why does every movie do that? You're like, oh, it's AI. We have all this advanced technology, all this stuff. And it's like, oh, but he's going to Max Headroom it up. That's a weird thing, but yeah.
It's the 90s.
I'm glad that you mentioned it because I thought the same thing. So maybe that's aging us, really. That's all that did.
Speaking of Alfred, I thought it was a little odd that neither Bruce or what's his name, Robin, like neither of them noticed that this man was dying. It was obvious he was dying from like the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
So like, these guys aren't paying him any attention.
And then when he finds out, Bruce is like, well, he's clearly dying. And then they go on to something else. He doesn't worry about it. He's like, no, we're going to make his life better. We're not going to do anything. He's like, no, he's still going to make us dinner, but he is dying.
The house is a complete mess. He comes back. He's like, "Hey guys, I'm all better. You couldn't pick up after yourselves. You waiting for me broom, to get off of my deathbed so that I could clean up after you?"
He's entitled, man. What do you want from
there's
him?
There's a solitude that's there. There's just a whole idea. He wanted to come back and make everybody a nice spot of tea.
Because even Batgirl was saying, like, you know, this isn't really the life that I want for my uncle. Like, he's basically working for you. And they're like, no, he's not. He's family. It's like, the family's making you dinner and tea every night, and you're paying him. Like, this is not, you're not family.
And hiding his own mate immortality.
Right.
I guess, well, but family does do that occasionally.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I guess.
That's true.
At least you get paid. I'm doing this now for free. I get nothing for it.
Well, I don't know if you get a bat suit, but I know I'm trying to build one of those.
So I have a question. What was y'all's take on Robin and Batman's interaction, particularly how it deals with, like, the idea of trust? Because Robin's telling Batman, like, you have to have trust in a relationship, but it's like, Robin, you shit the bed every single day. So what was y'all's take on that interaction?
I think in theory, it was probably to try to kind of match that transition from Robin to Nightwing, possibly. Kind of, you know, he's growing older. He's not going to be the Boy Wonder forever. But instead, it just came across very badly. But I don't really know if I even blame the actors or the script or the fact that they have three good guys that are major characters and three big villains that have to fit into this movie, so there's no time to do any real development. But it seemed very, very forced, and it didn't help with the Poison Ivy kind of giving them the pheromones. Again, very badly written, very kind of awkwardly handled, but it made it so that then you have this other kind of vagueness between, are they really just having this struggle between, you know, him growing up and not wanting to be second fiddle to Batman, or is it these pheromones, which, I mean, it's explained, but it comes across real sloppy.
I think the overarching story is family, to be honest with you, from Alfred all the way down to his McGregor syndrome to when he comes back to the niece to the tension between. It's about Batman. It's his journey. I mean, in a more very nuanced, probably much more than this movie will ever give credit for, nuanced tone, it's about him going from a singular guy to a family guy, to the Bat family, to the whole universe, because Batman's universe is a very big universe. So he's got this whole group of people around him and him transitioning between, you know, the beginning of what that looks like in his career from this to this. But they try first they're too on the nose, then they're not on the nose enough, then they're back super duper on the nose. And you're like, I don't even understand what you're trying to do here. And it just, again, I go back to the idea that somehow this little girl, and again, I'm probably spoiling, well, this whole movie is a spoil. No, so I'm going to go all the way back to the end. How does she just get the knowledge to, I mean, again, she's coming from boarding school. She's a teenager, I'm presuming. How does she get the knowledge to turn satellites that are Army property? How does she?
She's studying computer science.
It's the same way in Independence Day. If you have a Mac, you can destroy, you can reprogram a UFO. It's how it works. As long as you have a computer somewhere, you can hack it. And then you can do whatever you need to do. How would you? I hacked it. Oh, okay. We're good.
Those were U.S. Army satellites. It said it right on there. U.S. Army, which means it's the most basic programming it could possibly be.
Probably.
Because my thought was like, I mean, that's our national security system. So I'm wondering how that was so easily reprogrammed. I know it's Batman, but I would have thought Batman would have did it. And I would be like, okay, at least he's got the training for it because she just went to boarding school.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Batman's like, well, only if we have a computer genius. But I'm like, have you seen your lab? There's no way you're not a computer genius. There's no way you didn't do. Like, is Alfred right. The computer genius? And this whole time, you're like, I don't know how to read. Batman doesn't know how to read. It's okay.
No, Batman is just a designer. Look at those vehicles he came up with. They all have like nice neon lights. Them. He spends hours upon hours in the design room coming up with the coolest looking vehicles he can think of that'll sell lots of toys.
I blame Joel Schumacher on that. That's a complete Joel Schumacher blame. I blame him. I know he's passed away. I love him, but I blame Joel Schumacher.
That was actually not him. The studios came to him before they even started shooting, saying, here's what all the vehicles must look like because he's already done the run on the toys.
Oh.
So that's why how ridiculous a lot of those things look.
And Joel Schumacher went and to he the had to stick them like, in there. Throw up in my mouth a little bit before I get to work on what I have to design here. Were they laughing the entire time they were designing it?
I'm not sure exactly how satellites work. This is not like my area of expertise, but I'm pretty sure they can't just transmit sunlight from another part of the world. That didn't even seem even slightly believable. Why is this the thing? And then also the fact that they have to thaw in 11 minutes. They're going back and forth. Yes. He taps the keyboard twice and everything shifts into place. And then Freeze is like, no, you don't, and pushes him out the way, and everything goes the opposite direction.
Not just that, 11 minutes. Think about that. They're frozen in blocks of ice. Now, if I said hold your breath for 11 minutes, none of us would make it. Not one. Right. If you're listening to this right now, stop whatever you're doing, hold your breath for 11 minutes, and then
but
go
you're
back
at zero, to zero. So there's not even holding your breath. You're just suspended animation. So the movie suspends animation.
It's not carbonite. It's not a thing. They would just die. They would suffocate. It would be over.
Well, we were watching. I was watching the movie with my son, and he brought up there's a scene where the dog is peeing on a hydrant and freezes.
That's exactly
right.
And
he says, "Well, if it's human is 11 minutes to save, the dog's got to be like what 6 minutes? That dog
still,
is dead.
Still 11.
Still 11.
Was he still peeing when he was done, or was he did he shake it off and roll? I don't remember.
He shook and walked. Some guy finished buying a hot dog.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I do like the guy that gets out of the car after he unfreezes, and you can see the icicles are still attached to the car.
Yeah.
He's okay. He's just good. Because the sun was right on him, because somehow they moved satellites around him. Great sun. And these are big, massive beams of light that this universe has.
I want to talk about the auction house scene.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. That's a good one.
So... By the time it happened, I was watching this, and actually Chris and I were watching this at the same time, even though we don't live anywhere near each other. He was like, I just finished this scene. I'm like, you're like 2 minutes behind me. So we ended up kind of syncing up where we're watching it. And this was right after one of the other Mr. Freeze scenes that I was like, this is never going to end. Oh, so that they do the Mr. Freeze finds out about the whole auction, and Ivy's going to go to the auction. So they have all this stuff set up, and I was like, this is never going to end. This is going on so long. And then they get to the thing, and there's all these dancers. And the guys dressed like monkeys and all this other stuff. I was like, what is even happening anymore? Like, this movie is out of control. Everything is neon and bright. And it's like, I'm done. I'm already finished with this movie. I don't care how it ends. So, yeah, by the time the scene came on, it was too long and it was too busy. There's just too much going on.
The ape was a lot. Like, I
which
literally.
One?
So there were so many apes, but Pamela Isley as the ape, that was the one that was quite a bit, like, she just came out of nowhere and she's doing the ape thing. I didn't understand that. And it was all floral themed. Did we not think she was not going to show up?
Well, they don't know who she is yet. She's a new villain.
Right.
I mean, even the dancers were just, it was just so much. Like, the jumping around, it was very like, oh, we're in a jungle. Yeah. And here go these, you know, savages dancing around. I was like, okay, this is this is a bit much. I was not a
fan. What a right. question. What an idea
I'm
we got.
$1 million now.
Wait, so I have a question. So when it comes to Poison Ivy and, like, you know, her toxins and her powers, it only works on men, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
No, it's supposed to. It does. It does.
In this movie.
She is in this movie. So let me just repeat that. In the comic book, there is a much broader. There's several different lines of Pamela Isley. Multiple things of who she is. But in this movie, yes, I believe Alicia Silverstone is immune to her charms.
Because I remember when she's at the auction and she's like standing on stage and she blows her poison out and the whole crowd is swaying. The women on stage behind her when she's getting bid on are kind of making these faces like, who is she?
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, they're not affected. It's really just the men in the audience that are, you know.
Yeah, they still went along for the ride. They didn't say anything.
That was the 90s welling up inside of them. I don't know if you know that, but that was the Alanis Morissette instead of the 90s. That was like, sister, you are setting us back. Get the hell out of here. I don't know what you're trying to accomplish, but you are not making it work for the rest of us.
Alanis Morissette.
The dudes, on the other hand, were completely like Smashing Pumpkins, which was one of the award-winning songs in this movie.
That's what it ends with,
that Smashing Pumpkins song. So I think they were just like, I'll take $1 million. And that's exactly what happened.
This scene obviously produced the iconic Bat Visa card.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Expires never.
Because just like the previous movie, it's Batman Forever.
Oh, there we go. Rim shot.
Does the statement go to the Batcave or the Wayne House? Because either one doesn't feel like it's a good secret to have. Or does he have a P.O. box?
He has a P.O. box.
It's the same type of P.O. box from Batman 1966 where they ship that sub to.
Yeah.
I love the sub. Big fan of the sub.
A random bitter.
The other scene I want to talk about, guys, is the motorcycle racing scene hosted by Coolio.
Oh, yeah. I saw him and I was like, wait, is that Coolio? Instantly.
Well,
it was very shocking.
He was supposed
to be
the
Riddler. Anybody else.
I mean, not the Riddler. No, he was supposed to be Scarecrow.
Scarecrow,
he was supposed to
yeah.
be Scarecrow. He was supposed to be Scarecrow. If he wasn't Scarecrow, he was in this movie. But they found a way to put Coolio in this movie. I don't know if you guys know that. Like, they had all kinds of plans for Coolio. Coolio was a big part of whatever was happening in this franchise.
Every movie should find a way to put Coolio in the movie.
I think for a while it did, which is why this wasn't shocking at the time. It was like, oh, Coolio. Okay.
Well, the other thing is the guy's like, hey, you want to make a side bet? I bet you I'll beat you. You're a babe. Whatever he's doing. And then they're racing and his plan is to kill the competition. Like, this seems like a real big escalation for a drag race. What's happening here?
There and how did they end? Again, you're right. So there was that thought process. And they somehow ended the race on the bridge that was so high up that had no place to go. I mean, that's where they all decided that was the best location for us to have this race of death, was on the place where you could die.
Whoever the city planner is for Gotham really needs to go back to school.
Wow, they have put too many statues in that city. Big-handed statues that don't even have a road.
Huge hands.
Huge hands that just sort of come up out of nowhere. And at least if I were planning it, I would put a road on it. I mean, that's just me. I'd be like, this is a great place for a walkway. I would make something.
Or like
out
the statue
of this.
Holding the observatory up.
I mean,
with the two hands. Yeah, right. It was like this. That's the architectural feature. I mean, it's like, I just kind of figure like, who was planning this?
And imagine
process?
Going to this event. There's all these people at the event at the observatory, but that means they all had to like take either the craziest amount of stairs or a weird elevator that goes like diagonally across this statue with us holding it.
The Willy Wonka elevator.
Yeah.
And isn't it like the top of a mountain? Because they've got to go up quite a few steps to get there. I'm assuming at some point this is not like they enter at the bottom of the feet of the statue. And then they have to go all the way up top, which feels like at some point you got to like extra 15 minutes just to get up that elevator.
Also, I want to point out when they have their climactic fight at the end in this observatory, it's an observatory. It is just a giant telescope, and it's supposed to be an observatory. Instead, they put stuff all over the walls like it's a planetarium. Like they think we don't know the difference between the two buildings. So like, this is a planetarium and an observatory. It's all these things. Isn't that fun? And I was like, wait a minute. They just didn't want to have a bare wall, so they just put stuff around. It's terrible. This movie is so bad.
Tell us how you really feel, Jeremy.
No. When he was trying to come up, he was like, and he stopped at where Batgirl and Robin was like, hey, you guys need a ride? That's when you knew the movie was bad. Like, at that point, you were like, this is just... He left the two people...
Up to then, I was all in.
He left the two people at the bottom of the hill in the middle. Like, they could be washed away at any moment. And then he went and grabbed the two that could find their own way out. And he's like, you guys need a ride? Because you're lighter. Because these two folks, they were not cutting it. I was like, grab the belt and shut the fuck up. Because you're going down.
This movie comes in just over 2 hours. Like, I think it's like 2 hours and 5 minutes.
Oh, Lord.
Was it long enough for you? Do you want more?
Was it long enough? Is a diabolical question.
It was a bit. I fast forwarded through a few parts.
About 2 hours of it.
Again, I think we're underestimating. Like, I'm going to contrarian view right at this point. We are underestimating how much Arnold Schwarzenegger's dialogue made this entire movie work. Honestly, it was Arnold Schwarzenegger's dialogue that brought the movie together, because it wasn't Emma Isley's. Uma Thurman, she was, I mean, I don't know. Was this before or this was after Kill Bill? No, this was before Kill Bill, right? So she hadn't got cool yet. But at this point, she's just like, wow. And whoever did her eyebrows sort of let them go all the way up top. I don't know. Did that come off at the end of the day? Or did she have to cut them up that high? Because I would be like, you need to give me a check. Somebody need to pay me to do that to my eyebrows on purpose.
What was your favorite Mr. Freeze pun?
Chill out. The chill out one, or it'd be there's the one where it's endless winter. It's just bombs away. Just so many.
I got two that I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed Freeze in Hell Batman.
That was great.
Yeah. Yes, Freeze in Hell Batman. That was great.
And I also really enjoyed Let's Kick Some Ice.
You could tell he actually loved doing it too. Like, as was doing it, you're like, you can tell he loves every moment of it, even though he just looks like Frozen Turbo Man. I was all about it.
Iceman cometh.
Yeah.
The Iceman cometh.
Take two of these and call me in the morning.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, why would he have that? Why would he have a specific serum for one weird, rare disease there's no cure for? He's like, well, I happen to have two of those in my arm, so I'm going to give it to you. It's not what my wife's dying from, so I wasn't working on that. This is something else that I knew one man must have. So I'm going to have this in my arm just in case.
I thought his wife had the same disease that Alfred
she
had.
He was stage one. He was stage one. So somehow or another, it could be he had a weird... the cryogenic fluid with the McGregor syndrome from working with it. I think he just figured he'd cure
all his diseases. I didn't realize that was the same disease because I just thought...
Yeah, that was the whole thing.
Alfred was at stage one, and he had figured out stage one, but his wife was at stage three. So he needed more. He needed more money, and he needed more diamonds just to keep himself going, apparently.
And diamonds somehow are absolute zero. I don't understand. How does that work?
There's no logic. They just looked cool in the light. Yeah, that's it. They're like, everyone likes diamonds.
You get the ice. I'll get the ice man.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting what you're saying, the way Arnold Schwarzenegger did his lines. Most of the time when he did his lines, no one could hear him, and they were actually doing the scene. So he had to do a voice. He had to do all his voices over again by ADR.
Oh, wow.
So that's why he's so excited by it, because he's not doing anything. He's sort of speaking the mic.
That's so funny. Oh, God.
And I think George Clooney played a very on-the-nose Bruce Wayne. He was not like he was not Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer was trying to be the ultra Bruce Wayne, and this guy was somewhere between Val Kilmer and, ER? I don't know, maybe Bruce Wayne. And he was definitely not Michael Keaton. He was definitely not cool like Val Kilmer. And he was somewhere in between. He definitely looked like he was coming out of ER. At any point that he was on scene, he looked like he had just done surgery.
I thought Clooney was awful in this movie. He wasn't even trying. Like, and I get it. The movie's not good, but like,
yeah,
you know, at least like Schwarzenegger's, he's giving some sort of effort. It was just like,
right.
What are you even doing in this movie, man? You obviously feel like you're too good for this. And I can tell that you think you're too good for this because you're not doing anything. There's the scene. Obviously, we talked about the whole thing with Alfred and how he's just like, yeah, I guess that guy's dying. And then there's also the scene with his girlfriend who's trying to get him to propose.
Elle McPherson. How did she end up? I read back and rewatched that. I was like, did they get Elle? Was she the girl in this whole? Like, how did she? What did Joel Schumacher have on her? What was like, you will be in this movie for at least 30 seconds, and I need you here. I'm just trying to figure out how did she end up, because I went back, and again, I'm old enough to where I'm like, is that Elle McPherson? I went back and I Googled. I was like, she's in this movie. Interesting.
Hey, they were shelling out the big bucks for these movies at the time anyway, so hey, why not?
They spent so much money on these other actors. You get to have Schwarzenegger, big draw, but he's not a good Mr. Freeze. Like, he's great as this Mr. Freeze only because it's an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie that Batman happens to be in. But otherwise, like, Mr. Freeze is a much cooler character, no pun intended, but than this version of Mr. Freeze. But instead you have Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it works for this, but it means everybody is that level of like super campy and super over the top. And I don't want to say bad acting, but almost like, again, like you're making a play for 11, 12 year olds, a comic book that is designed for children, not a comic book that would be interesting to someone else who, you know, is a little older, a little more mature, wants to watch this stuff. And I think for Bruce Wayne in general in this, to have the increasing kind of common trait in all these Batman movies is Batman becomes less and less important. He's in the movie and he's ultimately kind of going to stop whatever's happening. But these movies are about the villains. No one cares about Batman anymore. You have three of those. In fact, really, the first two are more Batman related than the third one. By the third one, it's already, you know, the Riddler and Two-Face the show. And this is, you know, the Mr. Freeze and Poison Ivy, and to some lesser degree Bane, because Bane really is tied more to Poison Ivy in the story here. But still, they're the focus of this movie. Batman's just there to stop it. But otherwise, he's not interesting. So he doesn't have to be a good Bruce Wayne because it doesn't matter. You don't really even care to see them. You want to see the villains. You don't care about Batman.
No, and it wasn't until Nolan, and Joel, you were right. I believe it wasn't until Nolan's movie that this movie got, that Batman became a focus again. It wasn't until Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight that the Batman Begins. It wasn't until that.
Yeah, that's right.
Years and years later.
It's like an 8-year gap. Came back.
That's like an 8-year gap between that movie and this movie when it first came out. So yeah, I mean, it was the death knell, actually, for Batman series for quite a few years. It performed so poorly. It dropped off. Its first run, first weekend was, expected for a Batman movie. But by the time it came second weekend, this thing dipped worse than the Eternals and Quantumania. It just went in the toilet. It actually got Razzies for awards they created for this movie.
Getting a Razzie is kind of cool.
This movie, they knew what was they were producing at the end of the day. When George Clooney was quoted on the last day of set to saying, "We just killed the franchise." Like, they knew how bad this was before it even got to the theaters. But though, I got to say, back to something you said earlier about sort of Elle McPherson, they were all interviewed on a panel about, they were all allowed to take one thing from the set. Schwarzenegger took his suit, the Iceman suit. Ivy took the throne, and George Clooney just asked for Elle McPherson.
I wonder how his wife, Amin Hamidi, thinks of she. Is she at the house now?
Ella's still there.
Is that like a 90-day fiance type situation?
You don't get with those memories. There was another actor I want to bring up in this movie. This is one of three movies that has two governors acting in it. Oh, yeah. Jesse Ventura is in this movie.
He's one of the security guards.
He's one of the Arkham guards.
He's one of the Arkham guards. I didn't even see that. That was a fun and interesting fact.
And was it the other one was Ralph Muller, I think that's how you pronounce his name. He was Mr. Universe. So those three of them knew each other from bodybuilding days as well in that's wrestling.
That's crazy.
And either of them could have been Bane and look better than the guy they actually had.
Exactly.
I want to change gears a little bit. This movie came out in the 90s, and you two being 90s experts will probably know this. A lot of movies that came out in the 90s, the soundtrack was a big deal. Mm-hmm. This is one of those few movies where the soundtrack did better than the movie itself.
Well,
I mean, we could see why.
Have you guys ever listened to the soundtrack? Have any idea what's on it?
I've never listened to this soundtrack, but I'm looking it up right now to see if I recognize any of these songs. And
I feel like,
look at that. There's an R. Kelly song on here.
Yeah, is there Foolish Games on there?
It is. You're right.
I love that song. I do know that song.
See, when this came out, everyone loved this album. It was very eclectic. It hit a bunch of different marketplaces, sold better than the movie itself, more units than actual tickets.
First Batman movie that did not have an Oscar nomination, including the one that had Val Kilmer, which we can all agree was like a little bit off the deep end. And that one had an Oscar nomination for most creative sound effecting. This one got zero. This one performed so badly, which again continues to speak volumes for when Andy Muschietti or whoever the guy was who did Flash brought this George Clooney back as a Batman in that movie. That's kind of why when you think about the different ways, like you could have taken Batman, Christopher Nolan's Batman, Christian Bale. You could have brought a ton of different. You had characters at this point you could have came with, but instead you went with George Clooney, which was like...
Gotta say, looking at this soundtrack, I'm a little disappointed that there's no Coolio songs. So I feel like that was...
Since he was there, you figured... Yeah,
I feel like that was just an easy tie-in right there. I mean, what are you doing?
So why don't we change gears and go into sort of... back to the production. And there were some other actors they considered for these roles before they actually did this. And I want to get your guys' take to figure out, was there a better opportunity? So... After the last Batman movie, Val Kilmer decided not to go forward with another Batman movie. He had a bad experience. So their first pick was Dave Duchovny.
I thought he was a Bane pick. I didn't think he was a Batman pick.
He was a Batman pick.
I could see that.
Yeah. I used to love him in the 90s. Oh, I would have been so excited.
X-Files. Yeah, it's the only thing. Yeah. It's the X-Files story.
He's more brooding than George Clooney. I feel like your Batman has to be a brooding guy.
You love the brooder. That's why
Keaton
you like
is the best.
Keaton was good.
Who brooded like Keaton?
Nobody brooded like Keaton. Nobody brooded and carried Rich at the same time.
Right. That's the role. That's the job.
And carried Rich really well. That's hard to do.
If we ever open a t-shirt shop, guys, a merch shop, we got to get a shirt that says no one broods like Keaton.
Oh, my God. Well, you just sold 10 copies, my friend.
The other character they're really debating on was Mr. Freeze. And there's quite a few of these that they went through. I think there's like six or seven of them.
And they picked the worst one.
the first one was Ed Harris.
Ed Harris
would have been fine. Ed Harris would have been fine.
Totally. He would have just disappeared in the background. This is the guy from Abyss that disappeared in the background.
Yeah. No, I think it would have been fine.
Okay. Pre-X-Men, Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, I can see that. If you imagine the cartoon version.
So they're just picking bald men. Okay.
Yeah. I was third. Third was me.
There's a type, Joel. Yeah. We're racially profiling this list right now.
Okay. Next, Christopher Lloyd.
Now, that just feel like that was a DEI.
I don't like that.
Way too quirky. Way too quirky.
No.
But it would still fit with the way the rest of this movie together. He would have still been just, it would have been a different kind of bizarre, but it would have worked.
He would have been good for Dr. Woodrow, though. He would have been.
That's what I was thinking.
I was just like, yes. You could have even said Marty.
Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins.
He would be so serious, and the rest of this movie would be insane, and it would make no sense whatsoever.
He'd be acting his butt off, and everybody else would just be doing one-liners.
That's He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. I mean, that's a repeat of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, because you had Frank Langella as Skeletor, and then you had Dolph Lundgren as He-Man. So, I mean, that's a repeat of that. Frank Langella acted the shit out of that movie, while Dolph Lundgren was like a cardboard cutout of He-Man.
Can you imagine Anthony Hopkins delivering the line, "What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age?" Are you kidding me?
And you'd be like, that was the best given line in the whole movie.
It would be terrifying the way he said it.
It would have been funny that you would like the emotion behind it would have been devastating.
That's right. He's got a new movie out, by the way, in case you missed his voice. There's a new trailer called Locked. Check it out on TV. It's an Anthony Hopkins movie. It's crazy.
All right. Next up, Hulk Hogan.
For which role?
Poison Ivy. That would have been amazing.
He would have done good as Poison Ivy. That would have been really interesting.
Check out these pheromones, brother. And they're both fighting over the love of Poison Ivy as Hulk Hogan.
Next, Jeremy's favorite, Sylvester Stallone.
He's in every one. It doesn't matter what movie we do, what role it's for. He's on the list, Sylvester Stallone, every time. Would he have been fine? I guess.
No, I mean, I think he would have made a great Bruce Wayne.
No.
No way.
That would have been so ridiculous.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. It would have been phenomenal. It would have been
like the Expendables prequel.
You just want him to yell, I'm the law, for no reason in there.
Sylvester Stallone as Batman and Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze.
You see how that works? Do you see how it writes itself?
Don't forget Hulk Hogan as Poison Ivy.
And Hulk Hogan as Poison. You know what? If we cast it that way, top 10 movie.
I actually want to see this movie now. I want to see this movie. Specifically, the Hogan as Ivy. I am very intrigued.
This thing just, it writes itself. You don't even have to do nothing with this. We just changed the whole movie. It went perfect. Go ahead.
Speaking of Bane, Kane Hodder?
Yeah, he was the guy that was Jason, one of the Jasons from Friday the 13th. He would have been fine. That would have made total sense.
Nameless face. Yeah.
I mean, Bane nameless. Doesn't really matter because he doesn't say or do anything. He's just grunting the entire film.
He's a horrible character that doesn't need to be in it.
Next up for Batgirl, we have Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Anybody would be better. Again, I thought.
It's the same thing as Silverstone. Honestly, it wouldn't have made it any better.
But you can honestly, Silverstone was like the worst part of this movie. So it'd be very easy to recast anybody. It would have been fine.
It would have been the same thing.
And last up, Alyssa Milano for Batgirl.
Fine. It couldn't have done worse. Been fine with me, too. Anyone from Saved by the Bell, all those folks, all been great. Better.
Kelly Kapowski.
Yeah, 100%.
Tiffany Amber Thiessen as Batgirl? You think
I'm
that
on board for that.
Way better.
That's going to get butts in the seats, man. I'll tell you that.
But that would definitely get butts in the seats. I can see how that would work. But I thought Alicia Silverstone would get butts in the seats. She was actually called Butt Girl because she gained weight and she had to have her suit redone during
that's crazy.
That's insane.
That is so 90s coded. I don't know what else to say about that. That's wild.
Do you know that George Clooney peed in his suit because he had no place to go pee in? He had to get a tube for him to pee in.
Hey, we've all
suit.
Been there. We've all been there. No shame.
There's no zipper on that thing. I know because they gave me a close-up of his crotch.
They zoomed in.
It's the first 10 seconds of the movie. It's like, all right, thank you for that.
So this movie, I think everyone's on the same page about the quality of this movie, but no matter how bad you hate it, what did you like about it and what could they have done better?
I liked the vehicles. I thought the vehicles were as like the last icy scene, the boat and the fact that he was like Shields. It threw back the original Michael Keaton storyline, you know, when he's like Shields and he just speaks in the thing and it all comes. That was so dope. That was cool vehicles. I thought even though they were completely on the nose, when they first launched the vehicles out of that incredibly long bat cave that they came out of, I thought the Red Robin's motorcycle was dope. I thought the Batmobile was dope. Great vehicles.
There's not much to be happy about in this movie. I like the part when they somehow used doors from a rocket as surfboards and surfed in the air down. I know there's nothing good in this movie. It is terrible. There's nothing I would say hit where it needs to hit at all.
Air surfing is, that's a new one.
Yeah.
And he said the line cowabunga, which tells you it's straight out of the 90s.
Jimmy's going to need a Xanax when this is over with. I'm so sorry, my friend.
They tried to make Batgirl, you know, the hero of the film because at the end of the day, it was her. Yeah, she's the one who kicked Poison Ivy's butt and basically, like, you know, chastises her about how she's, like, setting back, like, you know, women.
Alanis Morissette. It's the whole Alanis Morissette revenge of the 90s. She's like, you are putting this back, sister. She let Peter Ginsburg this shit out of Pamela Ivey. Then everything turned the tide. Everything went in their direction. And that's what it was all about.
Pretty much. So, I mean, they had her come up as like the forefront. She was able to save Batman and Robin. Matter of fact, when she and Robin go falling off the side of the building, Batman doesn't go to save them, and she ends up saving Robin. And then, of course, the whole computer hacking thing, which was ridiculous, she does that as well. So it's like, at the end of the day, they need a Batgirl to finish this up. So, hey, girl power. I'll salute that.
Jeremy looks like he's getting ready.
Clearly you guys don't, but that's okay.
I'm going to say, well, I don't think you guys, like, I've been married for 22 years. I'm surprised at you, Chris. Jeremy, aren't you married too? Shouldn't you just say that to say that? That just feels like that's proper enunciation.
I mean, it's the feeling of the movie at that point. It works. But just in general, this movie was so all over the place that I just didn't care. I just wanted it to be over. So I didn't care how it ended. I didn't care who ended it. They could have just frozen the city and it ended. And that'd be it. I'm fine with it.
Do you want to see the 3-hour cut, Jeremy?
There's a 3-hour cut.
No, not at all, no.
That has the Coolio song to cut out. I've been in for that. Then I'm in.
Oh, my God.
If it's just more involving of those weird gangs, I'm all in.
So, obviously, they've rebooted the DCU at this point. How would you like the new Batman and Robin that's going to be introduced? Do you want them to be campy like this or nice and gritty?
Dark.
No. The Brave and – so, just so you know, this is a very serious thing. So, they've got – the Batman as a Batman and Robin. So they've got that reborn story of Batman and Robin. That's main continuity. And then Batman Part 2, which is the Pattinson version, that's Elseworld's Batman. So they've got the Brave and the Bold. That's the main line. And that's actually focused on Damian Wayne. So that whole story, that movie is completely centered around Batman and Damian. So it's the whole Ra's al Ghul. It's the whole kind of taking that different version. Well, as the second version is, from what I understand, actually does focus on, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Freeze is potentially a character in this. There's some pretty bad characters in this next series. Even Hugo Strange may be a character in this next one. So this second Batman is going to be very dark. Joker for sure.
Real fast, when you were talking about the character Damian Wayne, and in my head I was like, Damian Wayne's? Like, why is he talking about him?
Damon Wayne.
Damon Wayans.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what? And then
Damon Wayans, yes.
I was so confused. And then I was like, oh, the character. Okay, got it.
Former star of Blank Man is going to portray the new Batman son.
Yeah. As Blank Man, though.
As Blank Man.
The crossover we didn't know we needed.
I'm sorry. That would be perfect. Like, with Hollywood, and that would be great. No, Damian Wayne is the genetically engineered son of Batman and Talia al Ghul, who is the daughter of the demon head, Ra's al Ghul, who's like 1,000 years old. So Damien...
He's the third Robin, I think, of...
He's the fourth. He's the fifth. Because it went Dick Grayson. It went... So Dick Grayson was huge, and then he became Nightwing, and then he became Teen Titans. In the 70s is when he kind of took on the Teen Titan role. Then it came into Jason Todd, who was the most troubled Batman. He's the one who stole the wheels off the Batmobile. And that's when Batman took him in, because he was like, how the hell did you get my wheels off? And he's like, I'll just train you anyway. He's the one that got killed by Joker, who came back as the Red Hood, right? And then you've got Tim Drake, who is the Red Robin. So he's the one that did, spoiler, he's the smartest Robin. So he's the one with the brains. And then you've got the best assassin, which is probably second only to Dick Grayson, which is Damian Wayne. And Damian Wayne was trained since the time he was born to be a Ra's al Ghul assassin, to be one of the league's top sharp players. So there's a whole line. Like, yeah, I'm your resident Batman nerd. Go ahead.
He's got some daddy issues.
So does Batman.
Everybody's got daddy issues. They just got money and daddy issues.
The reason, well, there's a lot of reasons why this movie doesn't work, but I think the reason it doesn't work even more so is because it's a Batman movie. And like, Batman more than really any superhero that I can think of off the top of my head, except maybe some of the X-Men, is like very dark, more so than Superman or Flash or anybody else. And so when you take, even looking at how Keaton played it, certainly how Tim Burton did it, and then you make a movie like this, it's almost like you're creating a completely new universe, because it's already been established that this is supposed to be dark. So I think that's also what makes this movie stand out even more than it already would have. If it was like a Superman movie, maybe not as much.
And I would say for the feel of this, you know, the Burton stuff, the first Batman's, I mean, it's still a little goofy, but the second one, it's that Tim Burton goofy, right? It's got a lot of weird characters. You have, you know, clowns on motorcycles and all this other crazy stuff going on, but it still has that darkness to it. In fact, it's very dark. The Penguin is very creepy. Everything is. Remove all that, though, and all you have is the outlandish weird crap, and that's the Batman Forever and this movie. Like, there's nothing else but Flash and Neon, and
that's
nothing else.
That's when Batman became a story to his own story. That's where That's where, when Christopher Nolan brought back Batman Begins, that's where the whole, that's why it became a $1 billion franchise, because people were hungry to see a true origin story and a study of Bruce Wayne, the serious Batman, which is what Michael Keaton should have started from the first Batman. They brought Tim Burton in to begin with because he was only going to do those two movies. He doesn't even do sequels. So he's only going to do these two movies. And then Michael Keaton was just out. Val Kilmer was a one and done because he couldn't get along with the director. And by the time Joel Schumacher made this movie, he even apologized for it. He's like, this is the one project that, I mean, like you said, Chris, when they destroyed it at the end of the filming, they knew they killed this thing. I mean, this is Batman we're talking about. That's, you know, if one thing can take away all superhero movies, it's Batman. Batman and Superman are the two movies that you can't get wrong. And amazingly enough, they've gotten wrong for quite some time.
Now, as you know, this is a sequel to Batman Forever. Imagine it wasn't. Imagine this was a sequel to Batman 66. Do you feel better about this movie?
No, because when Adam West walked into the room, he didn't have to say, I'm Batman. Yeah, I mean, he just sort of carried the, and I think he walked with what he was wearing. He wore shorts while surfing. So, I mean, he did that proudly. At some point, you just got to leave him alone.
Well, I'm saying as a spiritual sequel to the 66 campiness, does it make you feel better about this movie?
Yeah, it's not, I mean, I see what you're getting at, because I think that is kind of more what it feels like, but I don't know, without any of the fun. I don't know. Like, the 66 Batman was different. It had a whole different feel. That Batman is not, like, they don't have the extreme action scenes, because it's that more kind of traditional detective-y Batman in the 66 Batman, where this is still like the $1 million toys Batman, right? It's it's definitely a different feel. So I don't know. I mean, I think that's closer to a feel than any other Batman, but it still doesn't save this.
No, and they didn't do a lot of good fighting in this. Actually, if you look at George Clooney's legs, they were very much stuck together as he was moving around. I think he was afraid to move his shit around when he was flying around. He was like, I'm going to keep my legs together.
Well, he's walking in urine. Right. What do you expect?
That's true.
Yeah, he had just broken his leg. In fact, there's a scene where he's inside the rocket ship. He's like standing kind of weird because they had to cut off the Batman suit leg for him because of a cast.
Sheesh. I thought he was just posing as the action figure the whole time. So
remember when Robin was having the vines in him in the water, and this just stuck out to me when I watched it for the millionth time. When he went down the water and he went up, someone rewinded the tape and
they just rewound the film. Yes.
Yeah, that was great. And I was like, that is perfectly surmising my entire experience as I watched this movie.
The other thing about the fight scenes that was disappointing, I mean, all of these statements are just very meta, but Ivy, I feel like she just dies kind of easily for her to be such a primary villain. It was just like, that's it. What was the point of all of this? They killed her off very easily. And then it was just like, all right, this is...
Well, she's captured.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she didn't die. I thought she was dead, and then we saw her in an Arkham at the end.
Well, I mean, how did the plant? She had time to get up from the plant before the leaves turned over.
Also, it was her plant. She put the plant there. Why would her plant be like, now we're going to eat this lady that's helped us?
Yeah,
I
mean,
she was sitting in it before. It's just like, what a terrible way to go.
That scene was awful.
She just laid in there. She laid in there, and she's just laid there, screaming. She's like, oh, no, a plant. You're like, what is going on?
I'm the controller of plants. Oh, now I'm playing.
This is one of the few Batman movies where the villain did not die.
Until Mr. Freeze came into the Batman.
He didn't kill her. We had fade to black. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. He was.
If they don't die on scene, they
why did
dead.
They give him his full... Can anybody add to me why he got his full uniform in Arkham? Is there a reason? Could you not have left the guy in some suit and pajamas? I mean... Did you have to give him his full uniform? Doesn't that say he's going to be break? Was that the deal he made? Because I thought bringing his wife in was the deal.
Well, and we'll get you. Let's use the lab. You know, at the asylum, like what?
And the lab,
what are you right? Doing?
But then, and then you give him his full suit,
and then you give him his full, literally his full suit. Like, yes, I'm here.
The guy's wife and is like, dying. Go on, let's.
That's true. Let him have his suit. He's not.
He saved anybody. Alfred, guys. You got to think.
That's
about
true.
That.
He did.
The man that no one knew was dying.
I'm sensing from you guys did not like this movie. is there a worse Superman movie that's sorry superhero movie out there?
Oh gosh, I would say the actual Michael B. Jordan remake of Fantastic Four, that truly goes down as the most irrational superhero movie ever made. I don't quite understand it. I'm truly just befuddled by it, and I'm just wondering how we got there. And it bothers me every time I see it.
I didn't even know Michael B. Jordan was in a Fantastic Four movie. But that does not sound like something I would want to watch. Yeah, I don't know. I don't watch a ton of superhero movies. I am like a huge Batman fan. Like, oh, Batman has a movie. I'm going to watch it. I don't watch a ton of other superhero movies. Like, I'll watch stuff here and there. Like, you know, some of the stuff that they were doing with MCU was fun, and the Black Panther stuff. But like, I don't feel like my, I haven't seen enough to really know. So this is definitely the worst one of the ones I've seen.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry. You got to move on. You got to, like, I'd spend an hour tonight just watching an episode of Daredevil Reborn, Born Again, because at least you'll come back and be like, shit, that's dope. I walk away feeling good about myself. Thank you, Mr. Fergal. You just helped my evening move forward. That might just make things better. I don't know if that happens, but I feel good all about right. myself.
I mean, I don't know if there's a worse movie, to be honest. For the amount of money and time put into this, for this to be as bad as it is, I mean, there are worse superhero movies you can find that clearly don't cost any money. You should Google The Amazing Bulk. That's a terrible superhero movie, but it also costs like $14. So it's not going to be good. It's not going to be good at all. And even like that Fantastic Four movie, they didn't put the amount of time and effort and money that would have been put into this thing. And it's so bad. And it didn't have the same, I mean, Fantastic Four has a long history. I'm not saying it's not a big line, but you're talking Batman. You have decades of content to pull from, and this is what you put together from it. Like, there's no reason this is as bad as it is. So for a movie that's not just bad, but disappointingly bad, I don't know if there is a worse superhero movie.
Yeah, everyone wants original storylines until they get Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the last one I saw that I didn't like was one of those Wonder Woman movies.
84.
You would mean the one with Maxwell Lord. Yeah, I think that's the one. That's the one where they brought
Chris Pine. Oh, man. I don't even think I finished it. Like, a lot of the plot didn't really make any sense.
The
like,
Marvels was the one. When they start singing, I had to shut that shit off. I turned it. As soon as it became a musical, I can't handle when things become musicals on purpose. I don't mind singing incidentally, but when you do it on purpose and try to communicate this song, I need you to move away from me quickly. I just need us to separate.
The movie accidentally becomes a musical? How does that happen?
And, you know, in this movie, they were going to fight, and all of a sudden the guys were like, and like, oh no, it's becoming a musical. We don't know what we're doing. And it going out of control. It was crazy.
Imagine a person who has never seen this movie. They've listened to the show and they're like, should I go see this movie or not? Should they go out and find it?
Of course. You have to. You have to see it.
Yeah. I think this is worth seeing only because it is terrible. Go into it knowing you're going to watch some garbage and it's fine. I mean, I love watching garbage as long as I know ahead of time you're going to watch some garbage. And this is straight garbage.
If you like Batman, you love bat nipples, this is the movie for you.
And bat butts. Don't forget that.
And bat butts. Yes. Lots of bat butts. All different. Each one of their bat butts and bat bulges are closed, or lack thereof of bulges, are shown in close-up images on this movie. They all have their genitalia exposed, front and back.
You said the same thing about Garfield.
It's an interesting way to sum up a movie that we already said is clearly for kids.
Yeah.
Plenty of butts, plenty of bulges.
Best kids movie of the year. That's what I think.
And somehow it achieved porn status.
I think if you've listened to us this far along and you're saying to yourself, it cannot be this bad, go watch this movie. Prove us wrong, right?
Like, there is, everybody's... For some reason, Batman has been using Viagra because that guy's packing some heat.
That's where he keeps his shark repellent.
That dude is packing some heat. I'm not gonna be shaming the game. He's packing some heat. My goodness.
Honestly, it's not even all of that. It's also like the way they're talking. Some of these quotes, like at one point, Robin is talking to Poison Ivy when she's trying to poison him, and as he approaches her, he's like, is your thumb the only part that's green? I was like, okay.
Come on. Yeah, I remember that part. I'm like, this is stepping on some toes. And then I remembered the bat bulges. And so I was like, okay, this is full knocking the shoe and some soft porn into this Batman movie. Why the fuck not? It's already bad.
Hashtag bat bulges.
Fergal is a little hyper-focused on bat crotches.
Unfortunately, bat nipples, crotches, these are the wrong things to be focusing on in Batman movies. Can somebody bring Lucius Fox in and talk about the high wire shit again? Because
there is a high priority bat crotch becomes the post-credit clip we put in. So, in closing, guys, how would you rate this movie?
I would definitely rate this a bat thumb to the side, figuring out where to go next.
Yeah, no, this is an inflatable hand of Bane down. It's a huge thumbs down. This is the worst movie we've done. But again, if you know you're going to watch
No, it's not. Yes, Cemetery it is. Man is the worst movie you've ever done. No, Garfield comes in a close second.
Garfield was a wonderful children's movie. This is bad. This is bad for what it is. You know what? I'll give you this, Fergal. You know what I like more than this? The Punisher. That's how bad this is.
Oh, come on. See, he unfairly targets the Punisher. Anyone who hasn't seen the Thomas Jane movie, I mean, there were some scenes that were a little tough, but you guys all liked the Russian, right? You've seen the movie.
No one liked
Everybody Russian. Liked the Russian. You've not seen the movie. Now you're going to go never watch seen the it. Movie. Oh, it's a great movie. There's a Russian. There's a guy who sings. So you mentioned accidentally singing. So if I'm with my family and I'm at a diner and someone sits down with black fingernails and pulls a guitar out while looking lovingly at a dude across the way, I'm going to be like, honey, we need to get the check. Some shit's about to go down. It's time to get back up on the road. I'm not sure how you're feeling. But my weird tingly vibe is acting up. Let's get the fuck up out of here.
Your tingly vibe
is just not feeling good about what's happening right now. And I'm out. Man. So that's how you know shit's going down. And I think that did not happen in this movie. I would have completely missed the tingly vibe in this movie. I'd have been caught up with ice.
Yeah, this movie, despite the fact that it is like classically bad, like it's classic, and that's why I say if you haven't seen it you should see it, just because it's so bad that you just need to see how bad it can get. But I can't in good conscience give this a thumbs up, so I'm just gonna give it like one limp ivy down.
There you go.
That got a second.
Limp ivy. I think I'm gonna give it like a sideways thumb, only because I think the Mr. Freeze lines were like, they were so bad that I was laughing at them. Like kind of what Fergal was saying. It was like, he's saying these things that it's so ridiculous. And I went into it knowing it was going to be ridiculous. So I'll give it a half. Yeah, I'll give it a half. a half frozen thumb.
It won't be lit by me.
I would probably give this thing 3/4 of a battering down, because it's terrible. I mean, this is one of you said it was a one and done when they first saw this movie.
Yeah, that was me.
That's exactly what this thing. Like, I was watching it again. I'm like, why am I here? What bad decisions have I made in my life that brought me to this point of rewatching this movie again?
You're welcome.
Thank you. And I had to like pause it and leave a couple times just to like get through it to sort of collect myself.
Yeah, I mean, 2 hours for a bad movie is rough. It's that extra 30 minutes, you know, 90 minutes of a bad movie is one thing, but that extra 30 really, really just kills you.
It made me long for the Riddler and Two-Face.
Now, before we finish out, guys, I do have a mailbag. And actually, the two of you, I'd love to get your input on this, because it's really just a statement. And I think this statement is important to Fergal and Jeremy. So this is actually a Facebook comment that came in literally today. I totally agree that Ed Norton's Banner was amazing and my favorite Hulk. Agree or disagree?
Agree.
Ed Norton. Because it was Banner, right? There was Norton. Who else played the Hulk?
The current guy.
Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo. And then, obviously, we'll talk about He Who Shall Not Be Named, which is Eric Bana. And I know that he's out there somewhere, but he's going to be coming back.
I think that's a good take. Yeah, I think that's a good take.
Yeah, I'm not really a big fan of the Mark Ruffalo Hulk.
Me either. Thank you.
To be honest. So yeah, I think Norton definitely is better than him. And then, I mean, the thing about Lou Ferrigno is like, he just already looks like a beast, right?
Oh,
so
Lou Ferrigno. He's the most believable. About Lou Ferrigno.
Like, he's the most believable for me.
That's OG
just, like,
Hulk. He always, I don't know where this guy got his shirts, but everywhere he went, he had a new shirt to tear off. And it always tore off the exact same way. I just want to know where he's good. That's some consistent made quality shit right there. I'd like to.
Lou Ferrigno might be the GOAT, actually.
I think Lou Ferrigno probably shops with Hulk Hogan.
Oh, yeah.
So the same shirt that he just ripped.
Yeah. Yeah,
we've gone a little long today, guys, but thanks for being on the show with us. And where can they find you and the Rewind Rewatch podcast?
You can find us basically wherever you listen to podcasts at the Rewind Rewatch podcast. You also can hit us up on social media platforms. We are at RR90sPod, and also on Linktree, the same name, RR90sPod.
And Jeremy?
You have me every other week on Movie Smash, talking about old movies, but also on Retrovaniacs podcast every week, talking old video games.
And Fergal?
on Facebook out there talking about getting your nerd on, participating in things like this, talking about nerdy shit.
And for me, you can always find me at Off Panel Creations. We're always building some piece of nerdy furniture. And I'll thank you, our listeners, for spending some time with us today. And if you feel this is the best Batgirl movie out there today, feel free to reach out to us at movie-smash.com, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo, produced by me, Chris Roberts, executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It too can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts.
This movie is so bad.